The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Andrew Locher hosting the program live today from Edmond, Oklahoma, on the rainy campus of Armstrong College. We continue with well above average rainfall. It's a great spiritual analogy. It has been quite abundant really all year long, and it just really kept the campus looking beautiful. I was traveling recently, as I'll talk about in a moment, but not everybody's receiving the abundant rainfall like we are here. It does feel like fall outside, my favorite season of the year. I enjoy the cooler temperatures. It's just really beautiful out there now. And we're seeing some change of colors in the leaves on the trees. So that also is quite nice, although Oklahoma tends to turn quite brown and dead during the winter. We were just up in the Lake Geneva, Wisconsin area and experienced just some beautiful change of colors of the leaves on the trees up there. And we had a beautiful drive home coming from Wisconsin through Iowa into Missouri and then down on into Kansas before reaching Oklahoma. We crossed the Mississippi River, which is in flood stage in a lot of different parts of the river as it goes down. So there has been rainfall up north. It's affected the farmers, of course. And so beauty in a sense, and yet curses in other ways. Driving back from Wisconsin was really rather relaxing. Spent some quality time with my family. Some of our staff, however, are stuck in airports caused by weather delays or perhaps mechanical delays. So hopefully they'll get back pretty soon. That's a frustrating thing to suffer through that in travel. I am assisted today by the heroic Josh Sloan. He's been sick for a little while and I had to come in on this rainy morning not feeling well at all. So I appreciate his efforts so that we could have this program live for you here today. Your regular host, Stephen Fleury, will soon be back with broadcasting now from our sister campus over in Edstone, England. He's been traveling himself quite a bit. All of us have. And actually, I've been away from the program for the last few days. I don't know if he's been on. I know he wasn't on yesterday, of course. But prior to that, I don't know if he's returned to the airwaves yet. But we're anxious for that. Since his family returned to England about a week ago, he's also made a trip to Jerusalem with his father and a few others. We have the church's Gulfstream G450, and it made a round trip. It's returning home today with our pastor general aboard. The trip itself is 12,488 nautical miles, and the total flying time for this particular trip was about 29 hours from Edmond. It stopped over in Greenville, then up into Britain and down to Israel and back on its return trip. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe this is the fourth time now that we've flown our aircraft into Israel. So it's getting quite a bit of use. Of course, we had the Australasia trip just, I guess it was probably a year ago now, maybe a little bit more than that. And then all of the subsequent trips, it really has been a powerful tool for the work of God. Well, we were sorry to see Mr. Stephen Fleury and his family head back to England, but it also brought some really great news for us, too, on the Edmond campus. The Turgeons are back here with us. They spent the summer serving the British and European brethren. Mr. Turgeon used to be the regional director for that region, and so I'm sure that all of the people over there really enjoyed seeing him and his wife. One of their daughters is attending the college campus over at Edstone. One of their other daughters accompanied the flight crew on this most recent trip. And so it's kind of their family spread all over the world. But we're just really happy to have them back here in Edmond now. Mr. Turgeon oversaw construction projects at Edstone. He also is a dean of students. So he was there to inspire and encourage and work with the students. He's one of our teachers at the college. And so he was also doing that while in Edstone. But we need him here back at Edmond. He is the principal of Imperial Academy, and as I said, he's a dean of students at the college campus here. His wife teaches as well, and so we're just really quite happy to have them back They have a granddaughter here whom I'm sure they are showering with love. They haven't seen her in person for a little while, and so really a great family reunion. Happy to have them back here helping all of us out. They also, they touched down in Edmond for about a day or two and then went on to Western Canada and then down into California as well. So they too have been traveling extensively. They're probably anxious to get home and to enjoy the comforts and the routine of being at home. At the Feast of Tabernacles this year, Mr. Gerald Fleury placed quite an emphasis on Jerusalem. He highlighted our first print edition of Watch Jerusalem magazine hitting the mailboxes throughout Israel last week. We have the honor of introducing God to the average Israeli with a beautiful message of hope, just as we do everywhere else around the world. And yet there's this special focus on Jerusalem. Our efforts have been focused primarily on our website, watchjerusalem.co.il. I'd encourage you to visit that website. I'll talk about that in just a moment. That website has been really a great tool for us. It is a great tool for us. And now we're very excited to have the print edition of the magazine reaching the people all over Israel, as well as different locations around the planet. So be sure to visit that website. I just printed off the head or the front page of the website to give you an idea of what you can find there. First of all, there are three videos by Mr. Gerald Fleury that are posted online now. Two out of those three explain the prophetic role Germany plays in the Middle East as it's associated with Israel. And then the lead article, at least yesterday, was Germany Wants to Invade Syria by Richard Palmer, a man of many talents, a man that has to watch world events all over the earth. He's one of our instructors. He obviously contributes to a lot of our radio programs. He guest hosts, and he's got really a great article on Germany Wants to Invade Syria. That's the lead article on the watchjerusalem.co.il website. Other articles that are available up there is a prophesied resurgence in Israel. The little subhead says, Israel is thriving. How long will the good times last? And what comes next? Of course, there is political unrest. There's a failure to create a coalition government. In many ways, their politics are in disarray, as well as Mr. Gantz and Mr. Netanyahu struggle for leadership and control of the nation's politics. It is a divided nation, just like you find in the other end time nations of Israel. The website also has a personal introduction to the new Watch Jerusalem magazine from Mr. Gerald Fleury, and that's entitled Why Israel Needs This Magazine. Other articles include the vital importance of biblical archaeology. The article talks about how archaeologists are rejecting the Bible, even as more and more evidence surfaces proving the Bible record true. Of course, there's many other articles. I thought I'd just tease you with a couple other really interesting articles that are available there. This is truth that longtime listeners are familiar with. And yet for somebody that's just coming across this website, I think it proved to be very interesting. There's two articles up here. One is entitled Ireland, the Lost Tribe of Dan, and the other one, France, the Lost Tribe of Reuben. And so quite an education. So many lost tribes. Easy to identify if we use the Bible, our church literature, these articles, the United States and Britain and prophecy, all of this really helps paint this picture and helps us understand where these nations are. And it's prophetically very significant. With a print edition now in circulation, we intend to take advantage of other means of promotion. Mr. Brad McDonald has been doing a lot of research into print advertising. The online marketing team, Mr. Trables, Mr. Vahil, are also working on more directed online advertising to promote Watch Jerusalem since January 2016. And we've had works going on in Israel long before that. But since January 2016, you might be interested to know the church has invested more than $1 million in various projects throughout Israel, in the Middle Eastern nation of Israel. More than $1 million has been spent to promote this message of hope. During that same period of time, we have received about $430,000 in donations that are earmarked for expenses associated with Israel. We have hosted exhibits at Armstrong Auditorium here in Edmond, and we also live streamed those celebrations over to Jerusalem. We've had, I believe, more than 10,000 non-church visitors to these various exhibits. So we're already active in our work in that area, but the indication is that the intensity of our efforts is about to really accelerate. So that's very exciting developments for the work. It's exciting to have that print edition out there. It's kind of interesting. We've not necessarily doubled, but we probably had at least a 30% increase in workload for the editorial department with no additional staff, a staff that was already stretched pretty thin. And so it's just something to keep in mind for them as they produce these beautiful, just wonderful, high-quality publications for distribution. They really represent God quite well. The standard is outstanding. The articles are interesting. The videos are captivating. It's just a tremendous package and a great abundance. We have a new booklet as well. Just one last bit of news of the work that I like to cover at the start of each segment or each program that I'm able to guest host. This new booklet is something that we really want all of our listeners to have. So please, please visit the trumpet.com library tab to request or download a copy today. I understood yesterday that several thousand copies have already been downloaded. This past weekend, we aired a new Key of David program, the final one of the 2019 season. And that program was entitled The Book of Hebrews, What Christ is Doing Today. This is going to be our third highest producing new program of the 2019 season. We anticipate getting back into the studio in the next week or so to start the 2020 season of broadcasts. But here, the last one of the season is going to be one of the top three producing programs for last season. And if you just go back and look at the year 2019, it's easily going to be in the top 10, probably the seventh or eighth most responsive program of the year. The repeats that we air on the Key of David program obviously are picked based on response and what they offer and everything else. And so for this to come in the top 10, it's really exciting. By the way, I'd like to thank our volunteer operators that took calls during the feast this year. There's no way we could have handled the call volume without your sacrifice this past weekend. We just had a great weekend of response, and it does require considerable effort on the part of our in-home operators that were in hotel rooms, perhaps, or somebody else's home. They still volunteered, logged in, and helped us take those calls. We'll be mailing out thousands of copies of the new Hebrews booklet based on just that Key of David program. Those of us that attended the Feast of Tabernacles received a copy there. Mr. Gerald Fleury also wrote a coworker letter just days before the feast, and we promoted the new booklet on Hebrews. So with the TV response, the coworker letter, the downloads, what we handed out at the Feast of Tabernacles around the world, we've already depleted more than half of the initial printing. Just in a matter of weeks, over half of those copies are already out the door. But that's okay, because Mr. Fleury indicated that he already has more content to add to that booklet. Let me give you a sense of what you could learn and read about if you had this booklet in your possession. Again, you can get it right now off the trumpet.com website. If you go to the literature library, it's the highlighted booklet that's right there. The title is The Book of Hebrews, What Jesus Christ is Doing Today. In the table of contents, there are five chapters. The first is Hebrews, is mainly for our day. I think it's very interesting timing that this revelation comes this late in the program. It's 2019, and here we get considerable depth and proof that this book is written for our time right now. Bible scholars would be oblivious, have been oblivious to that fact. They don't understand the relevance, and yet if you go through our booklet here and you study what's said, you find this biblical book or this Bible book of Hebrews really fits in perfectly with what's taking place today. The second chapter is the God family vision of Hebrews. God always inspires us with vision. The third chapter, our faithful high priest, our advocate that's there fighting for us, that's instructing, that's appearing and helping this work really grow. The fourth chapter is, I think it's a chapter that really inspires personal action. It's entitled Called to Be Teachers. It does intensify our need to prepare to serve. God has just amazing and really, just tremendously high expectation for our service. This chapter will really reinforce that point. The final chapter, the fifth chapter, is embrace your father's correction. God says he only corrects those sons whom he loves, those who respond. What a great way to finish this booklet that does make the book of Hebrews really come alive. All of this ties in perfectly with the throne of David, with activities in this end time in our future. And so please, I encourage you to get your copy today. Get into your study. It is featured on our website, as I said before. Well, when we return from a short break, I want to cover a few significant headlines or stories that are in the news right now. And so we'll take a short break and come right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. What it will be like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily.
Well, thank you for sticking with us. I know how anxious I am to get back into routine after a few busy weeks away from home, away from the office. I've been in the snow up to my knees in Alberta, just in one place in the parking lot. It wasn't that awful up there. The snowfall, it was absolutely beautiful. And Alberta is such a gorgeous province. I've been in the rain in St. Louis, and then I was in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, just wonderful, cool temperatures, crisp, beautiful, clear skies. Like I said, all the changing colors. We were celebrating God's holy days with congregations all over the world, really. Those are the areas that I was able to go visit. What blessed nations we live in. What great beauty and abundance. I spent a little time with KPCG rock stars Grant Turgeon, Brent Noctegal in Lake Geneva. I really, really enjoyed being with all of you in those areas. It's great to catch up with everyone, some wonderful friends, making new friendships all over the world. Thanks to God's work, we get to travel. We get to spend time with people we met maybe decades ago, right up into somebody that we just met that day. It's really a tremendous family-building opportunity. I've also been taken aback by how many of you listen regularly to programming here on KPCG. That's really encouraging. There is a lot of effort that's poured into each and every one of the programs. They all have a different angle on our education, all of them critical to our development. I know that it takes a lot of effort on the part of the listeners, the readers, to keep up with everything that's produced. It is a great opportunity to experience just the overflowing amount of information that's offered. this radio station, KPCG, has really been, I think, a powerful tool in helping to prepare all of us for what lies ahead. It's a great component of God's work. While it was really hard to keep up with the news in travel, of course, I was able to watch news on television occasionally or hear it in the car as I was traveling by radio. But so much fake news out there. It is amazing the difference between just commercial news programming and that of God's work, the non-fake version that's presented here on KPCG is not frustrating. But if you listen to other news programs, it is very frustrating to watch those news shows, regardless of their angle or bias. It just, you struggle to find truth and meaning. It does really help when our experts here on staff analyze what's really going on and how it's biblically significant. They do so without bias or political agenda. And it just makes me pretty excited to get into the coming weeks now with our regular hosts of the various programs coming back live. Of course, some have carried on throughout the feast that we were away at. But nonetheless, we're getting back to our regular programming, our guest hosts. It's great to hear Mr. Palmer again explaining a lot of things that I don't understand all that well until he goes through it. And so I appreciate his work. Well, today is historically important for the Philadelphia Church of God, for God's work. 403 years ago on this day, Dirk Hartog's voyage in 1616 was the first recorded European discovery of Australia. Hartog and his crew aboard the Dutch East Indies Company ship Endracht made their discovery accidentally, landing on the west coast of Australia on what is now called Dirk Hartog Island in Shark Bay. Now, you might wonder, how is that important to the work today? Well, the simple answer is because we have so many wonderful Australian brethren, co-workers, employees, and students. Yes, we have Australian students at Armstrong College, both here and at Edstone. Staff members in our regional offices, some of that staff is composed of Australians. Teachers, radio hosts, special assistants to Dr. Mazar on our past digs and hopefully future digs, all of them Australians. So it's a good thing that Captain Dirk Hartog found them so they could come work for us. I'm glad they're found, glad Australia's been discovered, beautiful nation, and it's just great to have the Australian complement to God's great work. So yesterday afternoon, I received my trumpet brief, as I hope you did also. It's an email, a very short, succinct teaser, you could say, of a very significant news event. And if you clicked on that trumpet brief to read more, you were really treated to a deep, deep article written by Mr. Jeremiah Jocks. He, of course, is the host of The Sun Also Rises. And his area of focus, his specialty, is on what's happening in Asia. I don't want to bombard you with advertisements constantly throughout this program, but if you don't subscribe to this feature on thetrumpet.com, you really should. I want to quote to you from that trumpet brief. This is actually from the lengthier article that was on thetrumpet.com. This was from yesterday, October 24th. Mr. Jock said, Japan said on October 18th that instead of joining the United States-led coalition to safeguard vessels in the Middle Eastern waters, Tokyo will dispatch its own independent force to protect Japanese commercial ships navigating through the oil-rich region. They said that they want to ensure the safety of vessels related to Japan. I'm just going to kind of bounce around his piece here from thetrumpet.com and hopefully inspire you to go back there and read it. There are several different videos, radio programs that are embedded. The links are embedded on the trumpet.com website article. And it just really helps you to better understand what's taking place over there with the Japanese effort to protect their own with their own resources. It does seem a bit selfish, not quite as generous as the Allied effort. But beyond that, I think it risks creating confusion. There's a lot of militaries operating in those waters. And that could, of course, lead to problems. We don't know for sure, but as the world just kind of gathers different international forces with different motivations, different agendas, you can expect some kind of interaction there. Mr. Jox's piece continues, the force it currently includes one Japanese warship, but they're dispatching another vessel, at least one from Japan. The U.S.-led coalition over there, also patrolling the waters, trying to protect commercial naval traffic, includes forces from Australia, Bahrain, Britain, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates. They've all committed soldiers, aircraft, and ships to the initiative. This article says the U.S. encouraged Japan, its closest Asian ally, to join. But Japan receives 80% of its crude imports from the Middle East and prioritizes close ties with Iran as part of efforts to keep that economic lifeblood flowing into the Japanese economy. As Mr. Jox points out, this the current affairs, national trade, international trade, all of this gets quite complicated in a materialistic world. You end up being allied with people that you're also opposed to. It is quite confusing. As he points out, the Japanese decision places the declining influence of the United States on display, and it also highlights Japan's quiet return to militarism, having trouble reading today. And you wouldn't think I'd have trouble with the name Japan. History from World War II, as Mr. Jox points out, really reveals the Japanese mindset, their historical motivation. By the end of the Second World War, Japan had been fighting for some 14 years. So by the end of the war, more than a decade of fighting, more than 3 million Japanese were dead. And so they have paid a price for their ambitions, for their war fighting, just as other nations have. And yet that's quite a few people over a 14-year period of time. Mr. Jox said that, but that was, let's see, the arrangement engendered an era of comparative peace and economic growth for the Japanese. But that was nearly 75 years ago. And during that time, Japan has taken numerous stealthy but significant steps to cast off its pacifism and its dependence on America. And so since the war, Japan has been working behind the scenes to distance itself from America, to take on that more self-reliant agenda. Since 2014, Mr. Jox says, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has steadily pushed limits on military spending and has commissioned the first Japanese Marine unit since World War II. He has also pushed the development of weapon systems such as aircraft carriers and long-range missiles, all showing that Japan is ambitious for far more than self-defense. There is an embedded video there about Japan stockpiling plutonium. The final quote that I have here is, Japan's march away from pacifism and back to militarism is also significant because it is laying the foundation for the fulfillment of some specific Bible prophecies. Where else do you find concise, easy to read, hard for me to pronounce, easy to read, and very understandable analysis? Only on thetrumpet.com, only here on KPCG, without bias, just the facts, and then connecting it to prophecy. We have such great resources at our disposal. The Middle East is also boiling thanks to Iran and its aggression. We address this on our watchjerusalem.co.il website. The king of the South is flexing, seemingly unaware of the whirlwind response that it's going to face. There is an ominous warning from Israel's top military chief of staff. I want to quote from the Jerusalem Post. This is an article from yesterday. They say the IDF chief, or the Israeli Defense Force chief, says all fronts are, quote, fragile and could deteriorate into war. Israel is currently dealing with multiple arenas and enemies at the same time, with the northern front, the most fragile, at risk of deteriorating into war, IDF Chief of Staff General Aviv Kochavi said. On both the northern and southern fronts, the situation is tense and fragile and could deteriorate into confrontation. Further down, it says Israel's top military officer said that the central strategic challenge of the state of Israel lies in the northern arena, where Iran continues to consolidate its forces in Syria with the Hezbollah on its precision missile project. And so the Israelis are aware of the activities of the Iranians. I think the whole world really is, of the boldness of Iran, even though sanctioned heavily and somewhat a pariah nation to most every other country in the world. They continue to operate, to consolidate, to prepare for war. This article says, for years, Iran has been trying to establish a 1,200-kilometer length land bridge from Tehran to the Mediterranean, a major concern for Israel, which since 2013 has been carrying out a war between wars, campaigns aimed to prevent Iran from reaching its goal. So as their influence expands covertly, sometimes overtly, it is a real threat to the state of Israel, to the stability in the region, to the stability in the world. Japan's economy gets 80% of their energy resources out of that area. Japan has a significant economy. If that supply of energy is interrupted, the Japanese have to fight to get it back. But it's not just the Japanese. It's the Russians, the Americans, the Europeans, the whole region there. Israel stuck right in the middle. This article continues. Israeli officials have warned that Iran is also attempting to entrench itself in Iraq. And that's, of course, where you find U.S. troop buildup starting again. And then this chief of staff said, for many years, Hezbollah has taken the state of Lebanon hostage and established their army there. And so, again, he's just identifying the threats facing the nation. That this is a multi-year plan that he was talking about. And then he says that to prevent the consolidation by Iran, we are carrying out many operations that nobody knows anything about. And he said they're carried out by the IDF and the Mossad. And so typical to Israeli tradition, they're out there fighting for their own protection, as you'd expect. And there is a lot going on. War is on the horizon, and there is political unrest all over the world. I found this piece yesterday that I need to study into more. This is from Victor Davis Hanson, and it's a piece that appeared on FoxNews.com's website yesterday. The title of the article is U.S. Fears Nuclear Nightmare with Unreliable Ally, a scary, quote, Dr. Strangelove scenario. He says there are about 5,000 members of the U.S. military, mostly airmen, stationed at the huge, strategically located airbase in Incirlik, Turkey, northwest of the Syrian border. So we have this base in Turkey, which we've talked about at length in our materials. The American forces at Incirlik are also the custodians of about 50 B-61 nuclear bombs. Now, those bombs, they have scalable yield rates. In other words, you can turn up the power of these nuclear weapons or turn them down at their maximum yield. Each of them is 10 times more powerful than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So 50 of those bombs in Turkey with the potential for 10 times the yield, each one of those, 10 times stronger than what's been used in Japan. He says no one quite knows how the American contingent could manage to secretly remove the deadly nukes from their concrete vaults, bring them out onto the tarmac, load them onto planes, and fly them out safely over Turkish objections. That, in a sense, really means that we've already lost them, doesn't it? There's really no way to evacuate those weapons from Turkey. And as you start to pay attention to some of the peripheral details of the relationship with Turkey, with our allies, with Syria, with the ongoing wars, it's quite complicated. It's far more difficult to understand than what the liberal media press points out, where they just pick one little aspect that they were against, and now all of a sudden they're for because it's contrary to Donald Trump. The more you look into these complicated issues, you see that there's really no solution. Listen to this. This continues from Mr. Victor Davis Hanson's piece. He said Turkey in the past has threatened to go nuclear itself should the U.S. ever dare to transfer the lethal arsenal. They cite some examples here. In 1974, Turkey shut down all U.S. operations at Incirlik. American forces were expelled for 3 years until Washington caved and resumed arms supplies. Do you think maybe there's some pressure leverage behind the scenes that we might not know about? 50 nuclear weapons that we really can't evacuate out of the country. In 2016, Turkey cut off power to the base and barred U.S. flights, fearing that the dissident Turkish generals of a failed coup attempt might use the American facility as a sanctuary. So in 1974, they shut down operations. The U.S. had to leave. In 2016, again, this time the power is cut off to the base, stopping U.S. flights. President, or I think it's President Erdogan. Anyway, Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, has become NATO's only non-democratic nation. It is also NATO's only Muslim majority member. And this article points out that he feels no allegiance to Western-style democracy. Turkey opposes, if not detests, almost every American ally in the region and befriends almost every U.S. enemy. So this is our ally that essentially is holding hostage our nuclear weapons. Well, they don't like any of our friends, and they love all of our enemies. He says Turkey has frightened and alienated most NATO allies. Germany has pulled its small forces out of the country. Recently, Turkish forces accidentally shelled a U.S. Special Forces peacekeeping outpost on the Turkish-Syrian border. Now, Stephen Fleury drew attention to the sale of our advanced fighter, the F-35, to Turkey. At the same time, the Turks also bought Russian S-400 anti-aircraft missiles, perhaps the most advanced anti-aircraft missile system that the Russians market. And the problem is, as he points out, if they have our advanced fighters and the missile systems, as he says, it's conceivable that on-site Russian technicians could build into the S-400 systems ways to down the F-35, right? They make our weapons less lethal. Turkey is quite a conundrum for the world to deal with. This piece concludes, not since the U.S. came to the aid of Joseph Stalin's Soviet Union in World War II has America so disliked and so feared a valuable but utterly unstable ally. Really a great piece by Mr. Hansen there, Victor Davis Hansen. Something to think about. Of course, there's fighting, anger, protest against President Donald Trump. Now, at least in my mind, I find a connection. Maybe you think differently, but I think you can easily find a connection between some examples that I'm going to read to you here of rebellion and the curses that are befalling the state of California. Kind of shifting gears here, we're talking about the United States now. This is an article from the Associated Press just yesterday. Actually, I want to start with this one from CNN, also yesterday afternoon. It says, wildfire fueled by monster winds race through Sonoma County, leveling buildings. They report a raging wildfire that forced the evacuations of hundreds of Northern California homes is expected to grow, authorities said, even after it scorched thousands of acres in a matter of hours. This is all yesterday afternoon. So these explosive wildfires, once again in Sonoma County, well, they're forcing evacuations. They're destroying property. It says the blaze has claimed an unknown number of structures by early Thursday afternoon. A little further down, they say they expect it to grow. About 500 personnel were fighting the fire, officials said, but it was still 0% contained. It's just in a process of expansion right now as they try to devote resources to put an end to this blaze, to this destruction. But the problem is there's fires burning in other parts of the state as well. This report says there's 2,000 residents that were still under evacuation orders in that particular area. Another fire burned 5,000 acres in 3 hours. CNN meteorologist said at that rate, it's the equivalent of a football field burning every 3 seconds. That's how fast and powerful these fires are. Lastly, it says this is an emotional time for many of the people that have had to evacuate. It's only been 2 years since the fires that devastated our community, and for many, this will be a very stressful and anxious time. So the curses continue there. This article from the Associated Press, again, just kind of talks about the fires burning there, but it ties in Pacific Gas and Electric, the utility provider for the state of California, which filed for bankruptcy protection in January because of other fires in the last year or two. They're facing billions of dollars of damages that they and their insurance companies have to pay that were generated, the fires that were generated by equipment. People died. Their property was destroyed. They say thousands of homes over the past couple of years. And this investor-owned energy company has set aside billions of dollars for insurance companies and wildfire victims while facing a public backlash over its handling of the incidences. And so what they're pointing out here is nobody wants their property to burn, but nobody wants their power turned off. And so, again, you find a scenario that is windless. What are they supposed to do? They need power to live, to have an economy. And yet that power also brings with it the risk of sparking a wildfire, especially in this very windy season. And you just see these plagues continue. They can't figure out the problem. They can't just turn off their power and solve problems. They can't leave the power on and solve their problems. Nobody seems to ask why. Why so many problems in California? Well, their residents suffer. Their economy is suffering. All of that despite these massive blessings. There's protest and anger with President Donald Trump. Somehow it's his fault. And yet, if you just look at history, as we pointed out, this is the state that attacked God's work. This is the state that continues to fight the president as it leads the nation in many ways, from my perspective. They're the national leader of liberal policies, especially in their big cities. And we've talked about the problems facing those big cities, the intensifying crime, drug addiction, homelessness, other disasters, and yet the liberal movement just marches forward as though they're presenting the solution. And if you just step back and look, it's a coincidence, the enactment of many of those liberal policies with these burgeoning problems. Now, these aren't the only issues, but just consider the priorities of this liberal state and how they're not just using common sense. They just want a political argument. They want to rebel. And they're suffering as a result. There's so many radical ideas, so many prognostications from what are assumed to be reputable scientists. But what has been the outcome of their prognostications? This is an article from Breitbart from September 2019, September 22nd. The title is Climate Experts Are 0-41 with Their Doomsday Predictions. The article says, for more than 50 years, climate alarmists in the scientific community and environmental movement have not gotten even one prediction correct, but they do have a perfect record of getting 41 predictions wrong. It says these so-called experts have predicted some terrible environmental catastrophes, which they claimed were imminent, and yet they never happened. Why would any sane person listen to someone with an 0-41 record, the article asks. They give different scenarios. Would you counsel with an investment counselor who got it wrong every single time? Would you be willing to completely restructure your economy and sacrifice personal freedom so the experts who are 0-41 would have their way? I mean, it really is laughable, as they say. He lists the doomsday predictions the climate alarmists have gotten wrong. I'll just read a couple of these to you. I know mankind is doing the best he can, but I think if you step back and look at these alarmist predictions that echo what we hear today, every day, whether it come out of the mouth of a 16-year-old, a freshman politician, a liberal media expert, you hear the same things today. And yet if you just look back over the last couple of decades at all the failed prophecies, if you want to call them that, or their cause for alarm, you do have to just question why today would be any different. In 1970, they predicted an ice age by 2000. 1971, the ice age came, or they said, well, it didn't come in 2000, but surely by 2020 or 2030, we'll have an ice age. 1974, space satellites show new ice age coming fast. 1974, ozone depletion, a great peril to life. 1980, I remember this one, acid rain kills all life in the lakes. 1978, no end in sight to the 30-year cooling trend. Well, we're talking about warming today, but it was cooling just a couple decades ago. No end to it. We're facing an ice age. Now we're about to boil to death within just a matter of a couple decades. 1988, the Maldives Islands will be underwater by 2018. They're not. 1989, rising sea levels will obliterate nations if nothing done by 2000. 1989, New York City's West Side Highway underwater by 2019. It's not. You can still drive it. 2002, famine in 10 years if we don't give up eating fish, meat, and dairy. Again, that warning expired 19 years ago. 2008, the Arctic will be ice-free by 2018. 2008, climate genius Al Gore predicts ice-free Arctic by 2013. In 2009, climate genius Prince Charles says we have 96 months left to save the world. 2009 also, climate genius Al Gore moves his 2013 prediction of ice-free Arctic to 2014. He was off by a year. Then in 2013, the Arctic ice-free was moved to 2015. 1966, all the oil would be gone in 10 years. 1972, oil depleted in 20 years. In 2005, they predicted Manhattan would be underwater by 2015. You could go on and on and on. You hear all of these reports of deforestation or peak oil or no more farmland or ice age, climate warming, ozone, all of these predictions with great alarm. We just have weeks left or months left to act. We have to stop manufacturing plastic straws. We have to change this, that, or the other. And yet, if you look back just over the last couple of years, it's laughable. How do they have any genuine credibility when they've been wrong so often? Now, there's no doubt, and we don't claim that man is not abusing the planet. Of course, mankind is. But these alarmist agendas are politically motivated. They're scare tactics, and maybe there's some genuine thought there, some genuine concern, but they're not realistic. They're not based in science. Now, consider, again, the priorities of the liberal states. 2 days ago, the Associated Press ran this story. Trump administration unveils new water rules for California. Says the Trump administration on Tuesday unveiled new rules to govern California's scarce water, committing to send more to farmers in the Central Valley, despite warnings from environmental groups that it would imperil endangered species in the fragile San Joaquin Delta. 0-41 record, mind you. It says that the likely outcome of this administration's policy will result in environmental groups suing to block it. This senior attorney for the National Resource Defense Council said, I think this biological option is the end result of the Trump administration's junk science and political interference. What about their junk science and their political interference, their legal interference? This says the plan, President Trump's plan, would give water agencies more flexibility on how much water they can pump out of the state's rivers. When it's raining a lot, agencies can pump more. When it's dry, less would be pumped. Seems pretty logical, but that logic offends the radical agenda. Also, the government said it would monitor the location of endangered fish species, including the Delta smelt. If the fish are close to the pumps, the agencies would pump less to avoid sucking the fish in and killing them. But of course, it's not enough. And so lawsuits are on the horizon. Another article here from the Associated Press. Trump seeks to block California as global climate leader. This is from October 23rd. It says the Trump administration on Wednesday moved to topple California as a leading voice against climate change, charging in a federal lawsuit that the state exceeded its constitutional authority by joining with the Canadian province in a program to cut climate-damaging fossil fuel emissions. And so what we're finding here is this debate, whether the provinces are under national control or the states are under the authority of the federal government, or if they can act on their own. And so, of course, more lawsuits. It brings up constitutional questions. Does the president bind the nation, or is it up to the state? Who rules? It's anarchy. The complaint that was filed in the California federal court names the governor of California and others. It alleges California usurped federal power to conduct foreign policy and make international accords when it signed an ongoing agreement with Quebec to limit emissions through a so-called cap-and-trade program. And a little further down, this is such a biased piece on the Associated Press's website, but they say Trump mocks the science of climate change. And why shouldn't he? They mock him. His ideas aren't probably any more right than theirs, but they certainly have a terrible record. So why not question their junk science? President Trump is trying to revive the energy industry. Of course, he pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords, as they draw attention to. Just really upset about that still. But here's a quote from Stanford Law School, a professor there, that doesn't agree with the Trump agenda. However, she says the gist of this complaint is that California's conduct interferes with the idea that the nation speaks with a single voice on climate. In this case, by pulling out of the Paris Accords. Unlike some administration legal arguments, this one has some merit, regardless of what you think of global warming. That was from a different professor from the South Texas College of Law. And so you find a nation divided. You find a nation that's at war, that can't speak with one voice. Now, there are many news stories. Again, I'm looking forward to the analysis that will be coming in the next few days about some of the bigger issues on impeachment, on government coalitions, on Brexit, on the rise of the King of the South, the congealing, you could say, of the King of the North. Very interesting times. I was going to take another break. We really don't have time to do that. But I thought I'd wrap up by just encouraging those of you that listen who are not attending services with the PCG yet. We appreciate you listening. We really have been excited about all of you that have been able to come to the public appearance campaigns. And we hope that you're counseling to attend, that you're stirred to move on with this. But for those of you who have not yet taken that step, please let me encourage you to actively work on that soon. I was reviewing our latest edition of the Royal Vision magazine, the September-October 2019 issue. And again, please forgive all of the advertisements, but if you don't have a copy or a subscription to the Royal Vision, again, I encourage you to request that subscription. You can go online to do it. You can call our toll-free numbers to make the requests. Our phone numbers, our contact information is printed on all of our literature. Everything is offered to you with no cost to you at all. Everything we offer, free of charge. This last issue of Royal Vision had an article entitled, quote, "I am not yet a church member. How should I observe God's fall festivals?" It was just a short piece, and it caught my attention as I was just reviewing the magazine yesterday, that there are so many strong spiritual articles within Royal Vision, focused on Christian living, on prophecy. And again, if you ask for it, we'll send it to you. And this particular article stood out to me because the instruction it gave was fantastic on how to keep God's holy days at home. Home because you're not yet a member. But I was thinking, well, why not become a member? Why not take that step of faith to attend a campaign, to call a minister and request a visit, and really commit yourself to God's program? Yes, you can honor God's command to a certain extent by keeping the holy days on your own, but that's not enough. When you study the commands to keep those days, you see that we are told to assemble together. We do that wherever possible, and that requires attendance. But that attendance comes with a super uplifting interaction with others that think the same way that you're thinking, other like-minded people. We just enjoyed a Feast of Tabernacles experience with thousands of others around the world. I think we had 20, 25 different sites. I think it was closer to 20 different sites around the world. A neat travel opportunity. But beyond that, we had family activities, entertainment. There is so much happiness. There is spiritual instruction. Really, you just have to be part of this. Don't let anything hold you back. So I would encourage you to, most importantly, request the new Hebrews booklet. I would encourage you to continue to listen, to enroll in the Bible Correspondence Program, to really set some goals for the coming months, to educate yourself, to renew your prayer life, to invigorate your study life, to really commit yourself to these programs that we offer you. We're just really excited to share this message, this hope. And again, there's no cost to you whatsoever. There's no financial gain on our end. There's no ambition that way. We just really want to promote this message of hope. So thank you for listening today. We know that you're very busy, but we also know how important the programming is here on this station. And so please continue to commit yourself to it. Enjoy your Sabbath and have a really productive week that's coming. Thank you for listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Program.